Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind.
Saturdays with Jenny.
Well, this is my day for friends in the studio because a friend of mine has just written a column. Well, I suppose it's a column. It is a column. And I read it quietly and I just thought it's just so timeous that I want to bring her into the studio. And we're talking about Cesar Kelly Maritluli. And I know many of you know Cesar Kelly. I call her Czar. And she, I suppose at one stage I must have seen you working at Herd Boys, but not known who you were. You know, I mean, you must have been there because there was all the others I knew. So you must have been there. But that was, it was South Africa's first all black advertising agency.
It sounds like it was so many years ago, Jen.
Well, it was.
And it's good to be here. But yeah, it was a long time ago. But yes, I did work there. And you've inherited me ever since.
Well, I have, but I mean, it is nothing but a pleasure most of the time. And but I've never known anybody with a stronger self-will than yours. It is absolutely phenomenal. But let's talk about this column of yours, because it seems to me that everything is exactly the same as it was at the beginning of this year, and nothing is the same as it was at the beginning of this year. And you touch a little bit on your own journey during lockdown, and everybody... Whenever I talk to people about the lockdown, they say, yeah, no, we managed, we were happy, we liked it. It gave us time to think. We did this, I hated it. I couldn't talk to my friend, I couldn't be with them, I couldn't touch. So it's all in one sort of, like a trifle, really. They're different layers that people went through. But most people don't really remember much of what they went through during that lockdown period. And I'm not sure that you remember it, except the overall sense that things could not be possibly the same again. Let's take us through that journey of yours.
Do you know what's actually fantastic, Jen, is that I have structured a life of being a soloist, right? So my life is always about doing the things that appeal to me, and I do them without causing harm to the universe or to other people. Yet, and then at the beginning of the lockdown, when all my friends were coming undone, I'm like, oh my God, I can't go drinking. Of course, the drinking part was the important missing bit. But it very quickly transitioned to the how are you going to make creative and useful use of this time. So it's one thing to just say I'm chilling in, on my own and I'm loving the way the world is unfurling. But then you have these conversations with yourself. For me in particular, running a brand practice, you see your clients in the very beginning saying, in light of the COVID, and that's the email you didn't want to get because the next paragraph was, we're going to have to defer projects. So you start this thing panicking, right? And you're in a total spin. You're like, what am I going to eat? Can I afford my champagne? Because for me, poverty is life with no champagne. So like, can I afford the champagne? I know. Sometimes I have first world problems. Can I afford this? Can I afford that? Can I afford that? And then eventually you realize that anything that money can buy isn't everything. And when that moment hit me, that's when the unfurling began. And I started questioning the many things that I had attached great value to and the many things that I thought added meaning to my life. And in the bigger scheme of things, if you've got your health, if you've got your sanity, like I think for all of us to have emerged out of the sane is in itself just an act of great, great bravery and courage. So yeah, it's it continues to unfurl.
Well, I think it does. And I think, I mean, we were just talking a minute ago and I said, you know, we could do a list of things that we were talking about and watching and doing all those sort of things before. And you call it BC.
Yes.
Before COVID,
yes.
Which I think is great, and now it's upre COVID, and I mean, for instance, the Kardashians would not survive in an upre COVID world. They are so inconsequential, and they wear too much makeup anyway.
Thankfully, I think part of what is important now is we're starting to question what we consume and why we consume the things that we consume. Of course, there's always going to be room for mindless consumption, but I think that there's a lot more going on in the space of mindful consumption, particularly in the brand building marketing space. There's this wonderful convergence between between mindfulness, which a lot of people think is an Eastern practice, with consumption, which is very capitalist in nature. I, as an intersectional strategist, am turned on by stuff like that because I think it gets us to a place where you start to be incredibly aware and present in the choices that you're making, right? And culling the brands that you think are important in your life, or even the people you think are important. I mean, I've dumped 3 girlfriends since the beginning. No, because I've had to assess the, when I walk away from every interaction, do I feel happy or sad? And if I feel sad, it means you're not good for me. So then what am I doing? Do you know what I mean? So this journey of just reviewing and revising what you consume, how you spend your time, how you preserve your mental health has been the journey that we're going on now. And I don't know that for anyone who's attempting to evolve their self-awareness has room necessarily for the K-pack.
Well, listen, let's go on with this because it is so interesting. At what stage do you think you started? I suppose this is, it's osmosis, isn't it? You don't know when, you know, this sort of struck you. It just struck so many people because I think that we were living, some of us on our own, some of us not, but we were isolated one way or the other. And so I think you started realizing, which is what you actually said in this column, how little we actually do need. So it is, as you said, it is the food, it is having enough to, you know, buy a dress or a pair of sandals or something. We're not talking about monks here at all.
No.
We're not talking about that at all. But we're talking about, I think, things that matter. And mindfulness does come into it, doesn't it?
And it does. Sorry, Jen, to interrupt you. I think part of what has been really, really liberating and awakening for me is an understanding that you were aware from your first paycheck to when you got your first increase, because I seemed to try and keep pace with my increases. Like, the more I earned, the more I got. The more I earned, the more I got. And guess what? You can never quench the thirst for more, because there's always going to be something else you want. Mm-hmm. Then you get to a point where you look at that pair of shoes that you don't like. I mean, I've got bunions because I used to buy small leather shoes because my mother said leather stretches. Oh God. I mean, by the time that size 7 became a size 8, my feet were hurting. But I was doing all of this for the love of fashion or for looking the part. And all of these things are so inconsequential now, because you look at the stuff, you go, yes, I still love refined things. I still love things that are beautifully made, but they have to be consciously made. And I have to be really mindful in my purchase of them. So the journey that's unfolding now is one of just self-correction, but also forgiveness. Like, I forgive my ignorant self, because if I had known more then, I would have chosen differently.
But how could you?
That's the point, right? Now I know a little more, so I have a responsibility to just make better, smarter choices. But yeah, this is where we are.
So explain to people who really, mindfulness has not crossed their minds, what mindfulness entails, because it is just very simple.
You know, I think mindfulness is going to go through the same journey that sustainability went through, or even things like a shared value, where people use the term so flippantly that it loses its original meaning. How I have applied it and how I understand it, or the definition that resonates most with me, is the one that compels me to be present in the moment with the things that I'm doing, or the people I am with, or the choices that I'm making. So, for example, mindfulness is not, I'm at dinner with Jen, I'm not checking my phone, therefore I'm mindful. No, that's not it. It is, I now am presented with the September cover of the September edition of Vogue. Do I really need this? Right? What need does it fulfill in my life? And what am I trying to respond to versus I want it because this is what I've always bought. Like, in September, I've always bought the Vogue because it's the Bible version. It's just about being deliberate about the choices you're making, but also about your choice of words. So it's not just the choice of stuff. It's the choice of language. It's the choice of behavior, and it's the choice of just being aware of what's going on in you and therefore going on around you. I know it may sound incredibly esoteric or meditative for people who say they don't have time to sit quiet, but I know that if you're too busy to be quiet, you actually are the person who needs the time.
Needs a bit of mindfulness in your life. Well, we were talking about poetry earlier on, a brand new poetry award and a wonderful poet reading her own poem. And it does seem to me that poetry fits into the zeitgeist that we are now living in. But you also brought into this this column of yours brands and advertising. I know the advertising agencies have gone through horror. There's virtually no money, so it must have been absolutely brutal for them, but also brutal for their clients as well. So how do we approach, and how do advertising, or how should advertising agencies approach this new BC?
Do you know, Jen? This is my honors paper was about does advertising have a social role? A responsibility in society, or is it just a member of the social community? And I remember people saying to me, advertising has, because we're in advertising, our role is not to parent people, our role is to give them choices and then they can make those decisions. I disagree now. I'm a lot more aware that images are potent, that language is potent, and therefore that the things that we present, particularly if you think about kids who are latchkey kids who come home and all they do, they are babysat by the television. What they see on TV of people who look like them and sound them like them sounds or starts to take on an image of, this is my people, right? So if there's an older gentleman who should be old enough to be my father with pants around the knees, that seven-year-old thinks that's what older black men look like, right? And that is part of why we, who are practitioners in the brand building space, need to be a lot more respectful and a lot more responsible. So it's not just so flippant as to get X and you'll get the girl. No, that's not how it works. I mean, we're living in a culture where we're dealing with patriarchy, we're dealing with issues of gender imbalance. All of those things are things that we can't divorce from the role of creating messages for brands. So if you're a client or if you're an ad agency, I think our time is up. I think we can't say we're not here to parent people. We're here to issue responsible advertising messages. And they still sell, by the way. You don't lose the funk just because you're trying to be a lot more of a social citizen than just a capitalist purveyor of goods and services.
But I think you'd be found out quite quickly.
Yeah.
But if this sense of caring, I think caring is a word and kindness is a word.
Yeah.
Those are two words we haven't used for a long time.
Yeah.
And that is part of the new world that we're living in.
And
because we're not going to have too many choices, actually.
But also, Jen, and you're correct, because the idea of caring, compassion, kindness, all those words are words that sounded too soft, right, for the competent accountant who's the CEO. And I'm sorry, you can call in and tell me to be kinder to bean counters. But I think part of what's happening here is that until we have people who are a lot more attuned to human beings rather than consumers, then we won't see the change. Because I often say that we are consumers some of the time, but we're human all of the time. And the brands that are attending to the human part of you are the brands that you're going to choose, Jen. So as you're going through your list now, going, what are the brands that I'm going to cull? You're going to take off your list the brands that don't resonate at the level of your humanity. And all they just want to do is sell to you. You hate call center people because she doesn't call to ask how you are because she's really concerned, right? She just wants to know if she can sell you something. So the brands that are busy selling are fast running out of runway. The brands that will survive and the brands that will future-proof their businesses are those that are starting to understand that if you communicate at the level of my humanity, you may just have a lot more seconds of my time.
I mean, do you think this is all rubbish, or does it resonate in some way with you?
Start your Saturday.
Your Saturday with Jenny from 9 to 11 a.m. on Kaya FM
95.9.
And of course, we are still talking to Zara Marit-Luli about this wonderful column that she wrote. And I just found so much in it that resonated with me. And I think that we are having a conversation that I think many people are having and maybe not articulating. I want to talk to you about, because I think it is part and parcel of what you were writing about and articulating. And that is multitasking. And I actually feel giddy when I think of multitasking now. But I'm unable to watch the American elections without doing something else at the same time. It's so appalling.
I think you mean without slashing your wrist, Jen. Please, we want you alive. But yeah, so here's what I know about myself now. I know that when I'm multitasking, I'm not present. I have sent off-color jokes to my mother when I was trying to do something else. So I have now learned that I can only do one thing at a time. And even people who've worked with me understand that if you give me more than one thing to do, I get overwhelmed. And this idea of being overwhelmed could just be my body saying to me, I need you to be able to just focus. I know that there's an unfortunate, I guess, stereotypical angle that's attached to women about women are able to multitask. Black women are strong. I mean, like the you can go down a long list of these really harmful things about women who are strong and all these things that are dangerous to our mental health in the final scheme of things. But I'm here to tell you that if it's multitasking, for me, it's just something that I'm not able to do. And I'm learning more and more that if I work at the pace of my own education and increasing self-awareness, it gets a lot more joyful. It really does. Because I'm horrid at it. I really am. I really, really am.
I must say, I think it's very, very hard. And I think talking about mindfulness, I think you can't be mindful and multitask. It's not possible. So it is, in a way, we're talking about something much simpler and much more old-fashioned. When I say old-fashioned, I'm talking about good old-fashioned.
Yes.
I'm not talking about, you know. I'm finding it quite difficult to articulate what I feel, but I know that I'm feeling what I don't want to do.
Awesome.
And I think that's maybe what it is.
And that's the beginning of the journey. The beginning of the journey is I've often said, I think our life is about choices, and our choices are always at a T-junction, right? So it's either, does this increase happiness or does this cause harm to myself, to others, or to people that I care about? And that's what mindfulness, I think, compels us to do. With every choice and with every action, we have the opportunity to come to that T-junction and go, does this increase happiness or does this cause harm? Because if we just teach that to a six-year-old, they will grow.
Of course in they will. This,
right? So mindfulness won't be a thing that they have to try and understand using thesaurus and Google. It's just going to be a way that they live their lives. And that would be a fantastic thing.
Let's go to Makasonki, who has just given us a call. And Makasonki, welcome to Kai FM. You want to talk about a current advertisement?
Yeah, good morning, ladies. Yeah, VW, they've got an ad going right now. And the story is about a meeting, an online meeting that these people are having. And this guy's battling
Makasonki, yep. Just hang on a second. I just want you to repeat that. You were breaking up just a little bit, so I just want to get you. You're talking about this advertisement. Just say it again so that we can hear it clearly.
Right. It's a VW ad, right? And the storyline is they're having some sort of let's call it an online meeting, right?
Right.
And then this guy is battling with the mute button. And the lady is getting frustrated. And right at the end, when, you know, she's really in the thick of frustration, she switches to a Vietnamese English to say, Tressa e button. And I'm seeing that as a bit of a gray one, you know, thin ice territory, in the sense that, does it mean that if you feel somebody is being dumb, you need to now switch it down to a bit of a black accent? You know, could that be construed in that way?
It could be almost anyone talking to me, by the way, if it's technology, you know, just press a E button, you know, like E-tolls or something like that. But Zah, you will know much. I'm useless with technology, and people do talk to me as if I'm a child. So what are your thoughts on that?
No, thank you, Makasonka, for that. There was a time, believe it or not, when clients would ask us to record ads in posh English and black English. Treasure Shabalala and the Lawrence Dubers of this world would know this and would be horrified talking about it today. So that's the first piece. And the second piece is, I guess it's aligned to this idea that English spoken at a loud volume improves comprehension, which is an old way of saying, I am going to dumb this down to you because I'm going to help you. I'm going to help aid your comprehension. So you and I are in the same WhatsApp group. I do find an inability to appreciate that level of deductiveness, because you can be creative and funny and quirky without necessarily casting aspersions. So yeah, you and I are in the same WhatsApp group. And thank you so much for calling in, by the way.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Noel. Thanks very much indeed. And just remember always, Kai FM, any show, you can give us a call, 086 000 00 959. Well, Zara, listen, I mean, it goes on to food as well. So, you know, I'm fully aware that this could be a very long conversation, which we have to do over champagne, I think. Yeah. Talking about being simple. Yeah. I mean, just very good champagne. And we will share it,
yes.
You know, nicely. But I would love to expand on this as well, because it's much broader than we've been able to cover in the limited amount of time that we've got.
It would be always, always a pleasure, Jen. Always a pleasure.
Zara Marit-Lewley, thank you very, very much indeed. And you are reading Frenemies by Ken Auletta, and you are going for a coffee where now?
I'm going to go down to the Corner Cafe, because they leave me alone and they make the best cortado.
Well, there we go. There we go.
Saturdays with Jenny.
With Jenny, every Saturday from 9 to 11 a.m.
on Kaya FM 95.9.
Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Visit kayafm.co.za for more.